beautiful. Nobody ever said you used didn't know how to talk, did they? Good morning, everyone. How are you? Yay! It's Mother's Day. It's also Flower Communion today, and we have loads of flowers up here. Welcome to the First Unitarian Church of Alton. My name is Robin Crane, and I welcome you into this community of hope, reason, and transcendence. Here we open our loving minds to the mystery of wonder and the moral imagination. Here we transcend the day-to-day of our lives to seek for truths both meaningful and sustaining to us. Here we seek to offer a loving message that provides wholeness in a broken world. And here we seek to apply reason to our understanding of our world, unpopular though that may be. We are Unitarian Universalists. And I offer us our special newsletter welcome to so those that you are first-time weekly visitors. Announcements so you I don't know if any when the church service midweek. We're awfully glad you're here, and we hope to see you come back. We do have a nursery for infants and young children under the age of four. Maybe it's under the age of five. Four. She knows. it's through the left here, into the foyer, and the first door on the left. Our religious education program begins not at the beginning of the service, but about one-third of the way through when we sing a recessional hymn for the children and the teachers to go out. And then it's over usually about 11:30. Our service is over before then, so while we're waiting for them, we can go into the worker room here and have coffee and chat. At the front, we have the spirit chair, in which Nicole is sitting. Nicole is one of my exchange students who is living with me this year from Kenya, and she's out of school. Finals are done, yay! And she's got 3 more weeks before she goes home, and she's gonna try to figure out how to fit 4 suitcases worth of clothes into 2. So it's gonna be a challenge. At that spirit chair, we've got some games and some manual things that you can do. Even adults, if you think better or meditate better while your hands are moving, come up and get some kind of an activity to play with. So we welcome you into this home of comfort, spirit, justice, and hope. And we have loads of interesting announcements today. First of all, Joy tells me that we received our certificate for participating in Trick or Treat for UNICEF last year, and we thought we were going to raise $100, and we raised $143. So that's really a nice thing. I think this is a good thing for us to do on a regular basis. Mary Johnson and Robin Strandquist want us to know that there will be a cleanup and planting day on May 20th, that's next Saturday, from 9 in the morning until 2 in the afternoon, but you don't have to stay the whole time. You can come when you want to. Most of the work that we really need to have done is outside, but if you have allergies and you can't bend over and you don't want to do that, we'll work inside. There's plenty to do here too. So we really need your help. And Dee Evans, the president of the congregation, is announcing that on June 4th, that will be Reverend Dawn's last day in the pulpit. We would like to have a good bye party for them, although they will be around for a bit longer, but that would be a good day to have a good bye party for Reverend Dawn. So please think of ideas for a goodbye gift. Remember last year we gave Sunshine some little animal charms that were part of a collection that Sunshine was making. And we need something that's kind of personal, if we can think of it, that would help her to remember us. So if you can think of a fun idea, call Dee. Or call me if you want, and I will call Dee. Okay, we're happy to have as a guest in our pulpit today, Mark Fish. He is a member of the board at Emerson UU Chapel in Chesterfield, Missouri. And somewhere here I have, he also said he's been a member of Emerson for 8 years, heavily engaged in church life, serving in various roles such as worship chair, liturgist, member of the board, which he is now, and he enjoys performing trumpet music. We should have, if I'd known that, we'd have had him here playing a trumpet voluntary to call people into church. He also enjoys wood projects for the church and writing as well as delivering sermons, although he informed me that he does not write out word for word for word, so don't publish it. He speaks it better than he publishes. He is an IT project manager and a business analyst, as well as a father and a husband. But when he's daydreaming, he daydreams about hiking in the mountains and spending time in his kayak. Sounds interesting to me, but I'm way too old for that. If you have any flowers that you want to place in among these others, you can bring them forward during the rest of the announcements. Later on, we will ask our children to help us distribute it. And even if you're not a member, we would like to have you help us with this. Many items are needed for the personal care distribution on Saturday, May 27th, which is 2 weeks from this weekend. And there's a list in most of the orders of service that you have of the things that we need. We have 35 to 50 guests each fourth Saturday. Most of them only come once, but some are regulars. And in the winter particularly, they seem to appreciate the warmth. And we invite them into one of the Sunday school rooms where we serve coffee and hot cocoa and cookies, and they seem to kind of enjoy that. Our supplies are getting low, so we need your help before the 27th to buy personal care items, because these are the things that food stamps cannot be used for. You can bring items like that to the church on Mondays or Fridays when Becky is here, or on Saturday morning during that hour just before we open up at 10 o'clock. We got the 20th of the month. Oh, a gentle reminder. This year, we had income of about, we think, by the end of the year, we will have had income of about $100,000. Can you remember that? 100 is easy. We think we will have spent about $120,000. Okay, as you know, that means that we're $20,000 short. Now, we did not steal it, but we have money left over from when some of the larger churches in St. Louis gave us a bailout. We used it this year. We can use it next year, but pretty soon it's not going to be there because there's not much. And it's time that we have to figure out a solution to this, and we keep trying. So this is what I'm thinking about for next year. This is not my worship associate hat. This is my budget hat that I'm trying to take now just to give you a chance to understand that. If we do as-is spending, just what we're doing next year and what we have in contract, and allow a little bit for the roof, which appears to be giving us a problem again, it'll cost us $125,000. Now, if we don't do better about raising money, that means we will be $25,000 short. If we wanted to get a quarter-time RE director and do just one or two other things that we haven't been doing but we need to do, it would cost us $140,000. Remember, whether it's $125,000 or $140,000, that's more than $100,000, right? So we need $25,000 more to get to an as-is budget that doesn't involve any real changes, or $40,000 more. So that means that in pledging, we need like a 25 or 40% increase on average. Now, I will be honest, I've increased my pledge by 1/3. I would like to increase it by 40%, but that means that I have to give up the very last morning breakfast at Panera's. And I am one of Panera's best customers, but I may have to give it up just in order to give the money to the church, which I'm sure needs it more than I do. So, for a happy budget, those of you who haven't pledged, or even if you have pledged, remember, if we can get 25 or 40% more, we'll be happy. If we don't, we're going to really have some trouble, and we're going to have to do some cutting, and we could dip into the very last of our reserve, but believe me, it won't last more than about a year. And that means that this time next year, we'll be making some really tough decisions. So I really encourage you to try to do the best you can to pledge and help with fundraisers and that kind of stuff, because it really makes a big difference. If you have an announcement that you want read on Sunday morning, there are some forms up there in a basket, and you can just write it down, and we'll read it on Sunday morning. Now, let us enjoy a prelude by our very talented accompanist, pianist, Nicole Robbins. Today we have one of our mothers lighting the chalice for us. Mary Johnson is going to light the chalice while we speak together, a covenant for our life together. Love is the spirit of this church, and service its law. This is our great covenant, to dwell together in peace, to seek the truth in love, and to help one another.
The Flower Communion Service was created by Norbert Chopek, who lived from 1870 to 1942, who founded the Unitarian Church of Czechoslovakia. Chopek introduced a special service to that church on June 4th, 1923. So think about what was happening in Europe around that time. For some time, he had felt the need for some symbolic ritual that would bind people more closely together. The format had to be one that would not alienate any who had forsaken other religious traditions. The traditional Christian communion service with bread and wine was unacceptable to the members of his congregation because of their strong reaction against the Catholic Church. So he turned to the native beauty of their countryside for elements of a communion which would be genuine to them. This simple service was the result. It was such a success that it was held yearly in the spring. On the last Sunday before the summer recess of the Unitarian Church in Prague, all the children and adults participated in this colorful ritual, which gives concrete expression to the humanity-affirming principles of our liberal faith. But when the Nazis took control of Prague in 1940, they found Dr. Čapek's gospel of the inherent worth and beauty of every human person to be, as Nazi court records show, too dangerous to the Reich for Dr. Čapek to live. So Dr. Čapek was sent to Dachau, where he was killed the next year during a Nazi medical experiment. This gentle man suffered a cruel death, but his message of human hope and decency lives on through his flower communion, which is widely celebrated today. It is a noble and meaning-filled ritual which we are about to share. This service includes some of the original worship writings of Dr. Čapek to help us remember the principles and dreams for which he died. So please rise in body or in spirit to sing our opening hymn, number 1008, from the teal green hymnal, When Our Heart Is in a Holy Place.
Please be seated. Thank you. Whenever Norbert Čapek conducted his flower communion in Prague, he would say this prayer as he consecrated the flowers. Infinite Spirit of Life, we ask thy blessing on these thy messengers of fellowship and love. May they remind us, amid diversities of knowledge and of gifts, to be one in desire and devotion to thy holy will. May they also remind us of the value of comradeship, of doing and sharing alike. May we cherish friendship as one of thy most precious gifts. May we not let awareness of another's talents discourage us or sully our relationship. But may we realize that whatever we can do, great or small, the efforts of all of us are needed to do thy work in this world. And now it's time for us to share in the flower communion by exchanging flowers. I was going to ask the children to come forward and then carry the flower vases back and let each person select one flower, but there's more than one flower there per person. So maybe you could take two. I don't know, kind of guess what you think is right, because we don't want to waste the flowers, but we want you to be able to take them home. And along the side of the table, there are some little squares of wax paper that you might want to use to wrap around the stems. So can I ask the children to come forward in reverence and remembrance for what Chapek went through to stand up for his religious faith under the Third Reich, and take a flower vase or some of the little growing flowers back down the aisle and kind of pass them out to people. There's not much water in it, so you shouldn't have trouble. This one is particularly beautiful. It has very full. And I need someone to take some of these little pieces of wax paper around and give them to people. If you have flowers left over, you can bring them up here. I'm sure we'll have people who want to take more home at the end of the service. Thank you, Alex. They're beautiful. As you enjoy these flowers this morning, notice their shape and their beauty. They're individual flowers. Some of them maybe have a few flaws. Some don't have flaws. Some are large, some are small. Each flower is a gift that someone brought in this morning. Someone took some effort to cut them, or like me, run over to Walmart at the last minute on a Saturday night. But each flower represents a person's unique humanity, and therefore it deserves your kindest touch. Treat these flowers well. Now it's a time for all ages. Did you ever wonder about things that you don't know? Did you ever run to the dictionary or the encyclopedia if you're in my generation? Or if you're in the younger generation, did you ever whip out a smartphone to ask Siri or Google? I mean, I must do that 10 times a day. We're talking in the car about this and they say, "I wonder," and we go look it up. There are two different meanings of wonder. One is sort of like when we say, "Why does that happen? How can I learn more about it?" Another meaning of the word wonder is like when we say, "I don't know everything there is to know about that, but isn't it just awesome?" You know, I want to know more, but awesome. Two different ways of looking at the world and wondering about things we don't know. So I have a story for you today called "I Wonder" by Annika Harris, with some very beautiful illustrations by John Rowe. It starts out with a mother and a daughter walking through the woods. Now, because the text is written in white, it's a little bit hard for you to read, so I'm going to read from the book and just hope that I can coordinate the pictures. Eva loves to look for the moon. Whoops. I think I got it messed up. Thank you, Ken, bail me out. Eva loves to look for the moon. It follows her from place to place, disappearing behind trees and mountains, and then appearing again someplace new. And I'll bet every mother and father in here remembers raising their kids or being with their nieces and nephews when they swore that the moon was following them. Do you remember that? You didn't have that sense of distance, and the distance made it look like the moon was passing behind the trees, but really we were the ones who were moving. The moon is just there, but boy, when you're a kid, you think it's following you. "Look, Mama, there it is," said Eva. "The moon looks so beautiful in this sky." "How do you think it follows us, Eva?" said her mother. Well, Eva thinks about it, but she just can't figure out how that moon follows us. "It's okay to say I don't know," says her mother. "When we don't know something, we get to wonder about it." "I wonder if the moon and the earth are friends," says Eva. Her mother smiles. "I like that idea." "But, Mama, how does the moon really stay close to us?" Mama replies, "There is an invisible force called gravity that pulls all the things in the universe together. Gravity keeps the moon close to the earth, and it keeps the planets close to the sun, too. They circle around like this." Eva understands a little better, but then she starts to wonder, "Mama, where does gravity come from?" "I don't know, Eva. Nobody really knows for sure." See if I can do that. "And when no one knows the answer to something, it is called a mystery. A mystery is something for everyone to wonder about together." How much fun. Eva imagines herself wondering about gravity together with all the people of the world. Eva watches the moon disappear behind the clouds as she walks, excited to see where it will appear next. How many grains of sand are there in the whole world, Mama? Isaac Asimov wrote a book once and said that if you want to understand the meaning of trillion, think about all the sand on all the ocean beaches and river beaches and lake beaches in the whole world. Well, Mama didn't know about Isaac Asimov's good guess. So she says, you know, I wonder about that too. There are trillions and trillions of grains of sand, but nobody knows exactly how many. So Eva tries to think about all the sand in the whole world. It feels so big that I can't fit all that into my imagination. It makes me feel dizzy, like I'm falling. I know what you mean, her mother agrees, and I'm sure other people feel the same way too. So Eva walks down another path looking for the moon, and a little orange butterfly appears. And then she notices that there are butterflies everywhere. Mama, where did all of those butterflies come from? These butterflies have been flying around for a few days, but they started out as caterpillars. And those caterpillars came from eggs. And those eggs came from other butterflies. There are cycles all around us with one thing ending and another beginning. Things are always changing. Can you think of other things that change? Clouds change and frogs and me, says Eva. And she and her mother continue their walk. Later, Eva wonders, Mama, what was here before all the butterflies and frogs and clouds, before everything? I don't know, answers her mother. It's another mystery. I like trying to imagine what was here before the beginning of everything. What do you think was here? That's a clever mama. You don't try to give an answer that you don't know the answer to. And Eva says, smiling, I don't know. She thinks about it for a long time, and then she has an idea. I wonder if there were feelings. As she walks home, Eva sees the moon again, glowing brightly above the roof of her house. Let's go inside and look for the moon through the window. We live with some big mysteries. When we come upon one, we're given a little gift. Every mystery is something for all of us to wonder about together. What do you wonder about every day? And do you ask Siri and Google? Okay, I hope you enjoyed that story. It's got a creative mama in it and a creative little girl. Now it's the time for children and teachers to leave for their classes as we sing Go Your Way in Peace. And let's try to sing both verses this time, okay? Good timing. Our reading is a flower communion blessing by Thomas Rhodes, a UU minister, who asks us to really, really look at these flowers that we brought today. He He says, "Within our hands we hold the resurrection of the world. Transient and imperfect, these blossoms are still gifts of infinite value, like ourselves. Too often we seek permanence and perfection, resisting change, blind to our shortcomings. We become caught up in the petty issues and routine activities of our daily lives. May these flowers serve as a reminder, as they allow themselves to open to the heavens, for despite their imperfections, they still have integrity. And though they are transient, they contain the seeds of transcendence, like ourselves. Let us then also open ourselves to mystery and wonder, fretting not about small mishaps or even, for now, great misfortune. For the resurrection of the world is at our fingertips. The resurrection lies within us. Let us keep a moment of silent appreciation together." Our own spiritual lives are filled up. Our own hearts are warmed by the act of giving time, talents, love, comfort, and our many other human resources. We each receive from this church the opportunity to explore meaning, purpose, and value in our lives. Does the financial contribution we make here reflect what we receive? How does our collective money transform those within and beyond our congregation's walls? What could another 40% do for our congregational life and our ability to serve in the community? We can hope. This morning's offering will be most sincerely and gratefully received. May it be lovingly given.
Please join in reciting in unison the offering blessing displayed on the wall and printed in your order of service. To the work of the church, which is weaving a tapestry of love we call community, we dedicate ourselves and these our offerings.
We regularly take time to recognize the joys and sorrows, the celebrations and struggles of this community. We do this by taking one or more stones from the bowls as we enter at the back of the sanctuary or else from the bowl here on the chancel. We allow the stones to focus our awareness on those things that are most important in our lives. Then we place those stones in the cleansing waters of this community, part of which has been collected during our autumn water communion service. If you have joys, sorrows, celebrations, or struggles you wish to recognize, you are invited to come forward down this aisle in a ritual of joy and sorrow. And Mark Fish, our friend from Emerson, will hold a bowl of stones here at the front of the church for those who want to use them.
Our pastoral prayer today is adapted from a piece written by Carol Allman Morton. On Mother's Day, we honor those who have been teachers, confidants, and friends. We acknowledge that it is not biology that makes a parent, but love and attention. For those of us who have lost a father, a mother, or child, we hold their memories in our hearts. For all of us who are fathers or mothers, we ask for continued help and discerning how best to care for our children, whether they are 5 or 50 years old. May the strands of relationship between ourselves and all of creation grow ever stronger. May all of us, no matter what our place in the cycle of life, experience nurture and love. And may we pass on that love to those we encounter on our paths. May it be so.
Please rise as you are able to sing hymn 1012 in the teal green hymnal, When I Am Frightened. It is a plea for mothering and friendship from all those around us. The words will be displayed on the wall. Please rise.
Oh, Please be seated.
Sobhanfo Somay, I hope I'm pronouncing this right, was a writer, teacher, and activist from the small West African country of Burkina Faso. Until she died just a few months ago, Somay was widely known as the leading voice to come to the West to share the wisdom of African spirituality, specifically the Dagara ritual. Somay wrote about raising children in a short piece that was included in a delightful book called Bless This Child, a treasury of poems, quotations, and readings to celebrate birth. It was collected by Edward Searle and published by Skinner House. Somay said, and you might recognize this message, if children grow up with the consciousness that their community consists of just mama and papa, and then they have to deal with a problem that they alone cannot solve, they will have no one outside the family to whom they can turn. The parents and only the parents are responsible for what the child makes of itself, and that is really too much to ask from two people. Often, in fact, it is only one parent who has to do it all. If children are given a wider concept of community, they will not be at the mercy of just one person. The child can then seek out another to whom he wants to turn, and if this person doesn't help him out, then he can go on to the next. Since we are all only people, we all have our limits as to what we can do and what we are able to give. To raise children, we are always dependent upon the support of others. As we say in my village, it needs a whole village to raise a child. Some of us may recognize a similar reference in a political book written by a recent US presidential candidate. So May continues with a second important insight, quote, and it is just as true to say that it needs a whole village to look after the emotional health of the parents, end quote. Let us meditate on flowers, communities, parents, and faith leaders. Individually, each can be beautiful and unique, also flawed and weak. Together, they provide a more complete whole. Our time for quiet meditation will end with a chime.
Thank you so much for allowing me to speak here today. I'm honored to be here. This is the 10th sermon that I've ever written, but the first one I've ever delivered outside of my home base. So thank you so much for the warm hospitality you've shown me today. As a layperson who doesn't write and deliver them on a regular basis, I must say that they are both challenging and rewarding. I always come away afterwards having discovered things about my topic and about myself that I didn't know before. I also have to say that I'm a little more nervous than usual delivering this sermon. When I was asked by Reverend Don to speak to you today, I was really excited about it until I realized it was on Mother's Day. This service is notoriously difficult to pull off well, even by seasoned ministers. And the fact that I'm a dad and not a mom made me wonder if I could do it justice. But then again, I thought, why not? I know a few moms. I have a mom. I'm married to a mom. And I dare say I've mothered a little here and there myself. So I have a few insights. And I hope that if nothing else, I'll give you something to think about with you and your family. First of all, we do need to acknowledge that despite the flowers and chocolate and breakfast in bed that this day is known for, that it is a difficult day for many people. This day may bring up complicated and challenging emotions. There are people who are angry at their moms and people who are very appreciative of them. There are moms who are proud and happy with their relationship with their children and moms who have difficult relationships with their children who may be feeling guilt or regret. There are mothers who lost their children and children who have lost their mothers. There are adopted children who are both appreciative of their adoptive moms and wonder about their birth moms. And there are would-be mothers who wish they could have children, as well as potential mothers who have no interest in having children at all. So this day is packed with so many different emotions depending on your story. So please let us be mindful of everyone's perspective on this day. Now, when I took on this sermon assignment, my parents were transitioning into a new stage of life. They had just moved into the local care center in their hometown in Iowa. My dad had gotten through a life-changing surgery, which required him to move from having an independent life at their home to a full-time care facility. And my mother, who has Alzheimer's, had my father, who was her primary caregiver, so while they were living at home. So now that he needed to be at the care center, she needed to be there as well. And I know some of you know the struggles of helping your parents with this kind of move. And it was a very big challenge for my brother and I, and it didn't go smoothly. It's difficult to parent our parents, right? So I thought about that as Reverend Don asked me to give the Mother's Day sermon. And I thought that maybe by giving that, I could reflect on my parents and parenting in general. And because I like balance and I'm a glutton for punishment, I volunteered to preach out on Father's Day at Emerson as well. So because I had agreed to do both services, I was thinking of this topic as a two-part sermon, motherhood and fatherhood together, yin and yang. I approach it as it was a mystery to solve, a wonder. The mystery of what it means to be a father and a mother. And it's been an interesting journey, and I was a little surprised by what I found at the end. So I hope it's okay if I take you along for the ride. First of all, let's talk about the kinds of mothers there are out there. There are the biological moms, of course, who go through conception, pregnancy, and birth. My hats are off to you women for that very beautiful physical miracle. It really is truly wonderful. And then there are the moms who care for a child from birth through adulthood, whether 5 through 50, it never ends. And those are the birth and adoptive moms. Then there are the other motherly people from families where there isn't a traditional mom. Such as single and double dad families. Then there are the surrogate moms and caretakers, like in an extended family, and the caregivers and nurturers in the community. So many different kinds of families out there and so many different kinds of mothers. And I learned that you don't have to be a traditional mother in order to mother. And because I'm not a mother, I wanted to really know what it meant to be one. What roles do they provide in the family? What traits do moms have? What do moms think of themselves, or what do moms think that it takes to be a mom? So I asked my wise Facebook friends, and all my friend moms joined in the chorus, and they gave me a wonderful list. And it included words like being warm, full of unconditional love, being wise, full of joy, being fun and playful and nurturing, being present. It involved teaching and listening, having persistence and patience, and being selfless and compassionate, and just being a very tough person in general to be able to handle motherhood. So what a great list, and such a high standard to live up to. But those responses perplexed me. And I looked at each of those and I thought, but can't dads do those same things? Aren't they often expected to do those same things? And then I looked at the things that dads are supposed to do, like lead and discipline and be the authority figure and make decisions and give advice and provide for the family. And I saw that many moms do the same things. So once a baby is born, is motherhood and fatherhood all that different? I decided to look at the really big picture. I looked at the creation process, not the biological one. I know how that works. But looking at how humans create things, everything we make, it doesn't matter if it's having a baby, building a house, making dinner, creating a computer application, or even going on vacation, they all have birth stories. I went to school to be an engineer, and I work as a project manager. And many of my hobbies involve making things. So I think about the creation process a lot, probably too much. It's a great way to procrastinate from actually making things. But I bet you like to make things too, so that makes us all experts. So let's look at the creation process and see if you agree with me. So the creation of anything starts with an idea. It doesn't exist yet. It's all in your mind. And then you have to flesh out the idea. You have to explore how to create it and whether it's even feasible to do. And then there's a decision point, a go, no-go moment. But once you're past that, you need to get the materials or ingredients to make it. And you have to create a space to make it and also a space to keep it for afterwards. And then you have to carefully create or build or grow it. You protect it while it's fragile, and then at some miraculous point, you realize it's done, it's made, it's completed. Your creation exists. It's alive. The idea that which only existed in your head has become a physical reality. That's a huge moment, right? It's the birth of something that you created. But even after the creation is complete, the job isn't done. You still have to take care of it. Protect it, fix it if it breaks. You might decide to make improvements to it. And maybe, eventually, you might have to let it go to someone else. So does that sound about right? Think about everything in your life that goes from thought to reality. You go through a similar process. Now I ask you, did you mother it into existence, or father it, or both? I once made a kayak out of wood and fiberglass. It took me 7 months from the moment I first dreamed of it to researching it, to buying the materials, to the actual construction, to the point where I first put it into the water to see if it floated. It was a painstaking process, which I loved. So yes, it was a labor of love. And yep, I birthed a boat. And I'm a very proud parent of it. I made that 2 years ago, and I love spending time with it. I've done a few things to improve it since then, and I have to take care of it on a regular basis. And I'm very protective because it doesn't react very well to sharp rocks. So you could even say that I baby it. So does that sound a bit like parenting? So with making babies, the father and mother roles are pretty distinct. The male and female have very specific jobs to do. It requires two people of different genders. But it's not like that in other forms of creation. It still requires male and female energies, but not necessarily male and female individuals. I like to refer to the yin and yang symbol and the Taoist philosophy to describe it. You know that symbol, right? The circle that is made up of black and white regions that are separated with a kind of S-shaped boundary between them. There's a white dot in the black region and a black dot in the white region. It kind of looks like the white is flowing into the black, and the black is flowing into the white. What it represents is the interconnection of opposing and complementary energies. Yin is thought of as the feminine energy, and yang as the masculine. The idea is that there should be a recognition that everything in existence has a combination of both energies. Even people, especially people. No matter what gender you identify as, you have both masculine and feminine energy inside you. Some people may have more masculine, and some people may have more feminine. And what you have more of is not necessarily related to what gender you are or what gender you're attracted to. The feminine traits related to female energy are compassion, introspection, flow, intuition, patience, receptivity, and creativity. And the male traits related to male energy are valor, assertion, direction, methodic thought, action, giving, and consciousness. Do those match your ideas of feminine masculine traits too? So when I look at my own personality, I notice that my traits are a mixture of both feminine and masculine. In fact, I think I'm about 50-50, which explains why I can be equally at ease in groups that are predominantly men or groups that are predominantly women. The point is that we all have a mixture of male and female in us, and that's a healthy thing. So looking at the creation processes and applying feminine and masculine symbolism, you can see that one person having a healthy mix of both traits can be both motherly and fatherly. Now, even though we're all capable of being mothers and fathers, I know that those traits don't always come naturally. It wasn't natural for me. I remember when my son was born, I was the most awkward father. I was afraid of putting my son's onesie on him for fear that I'd break him. So I had to learn how to be a dad. So why does it come naturally to some but not others? Well, I think it's about the personality preferences that we have. I remember a class I took many years ago. It was the Myers-Briggs Type Indicator Test. Have you ever heard of it? Okay. So it's an introspective self-report questionnaire designed to indicate psychological preferences and how we perceive the world around us and make decisions. It's based on Jungian psychology, who I'm a big fan of, and it can also be traced back to Plato. So how many of you have ever taken it? It's a lot of you. Awesome. Do you remember what type you are? Okay, cool. We're gonna get back to that. So it has four scales, which when combined, identify your type. There's the introverted, extroverted scale, which indicates whether you prefer getting energy from social interaction or by being alone. The sensing scale, which indicates what information you trust more, hard information or intuitive information. Then there's the judging, perceiving scale, which indicates whether you like to be more organized or more spontaneous. And the fourth is the thinking feeling scale, which describes whether you like to make decisions based purely on logic or by empathizing with the situation. But it's important to remember that it describes the preferences of each person, but not their ability. So you take the test, and it will give you a four-letter identifier that says what kind of personality you have. And there are 16 personality types, and they all have names which you would recognize from common job titles. So, you know, some of them are inspector and protector, counselor, healer, architect, champion, provider, teacher, those kinds of things. And some types are found more often in the general population than others. My type is ENTP, which has the title of inventor, and only 10% of the population identifies as that. It basically means that I'm an outwardly facing, intuitive, logical, and spontaneous person. And it does a pretty good job of describing my default preferences for acting and working. So this is sort of my wheelhouse. Things that fall into that are pretty easy for me. But I also have other abilities and strengths that are different from the ENTP type. The personality test describes preference, but not ability. So it's like it's like saying I prefer chocolate. It doesn't say that I don't like or appreciate any other flavor. So how does this relate to parenting? Well, some personality types align better with society's ideals of parenting than others. If you Google Myers-Briggs in parenting, you will see a description of what type of parent you are based on what personality type you have. They make sense. The protector type is known as the natural parent, and the provider is known as the nurturing parent. The inspector is the dutiful parent, and the supervisor is the chief parent. My inventor type is known as the innovative parent. What's interesting is that the personality types aren't equally distributed between men and women. Some types have a higher percentage of women, and some types have a higher percentage of men. So for example, 75% of the protector slash natural parent type are women. So it makes sense to think of that type as being motherly. And 75% of the crafting slash laid back parent type are men. So it makes sense to think of those folks more as fathers. But the most important thing to realize here is that there are women who have more masculine parenting types, just like the laid back parent, and there are men who have the more feminine parenting types, like the natural parent. So should those men and women who are in the minority for their type embrace that parenting type that might be opposite of their gender, or try to be like the parenting types that are more associated with their gender? Here's another interesting fact about the distribution of personality and parenting types. Roughly half of the US population fits into just four of those 16 possible types. And out of those four types, two of them are more female-dominated, and two of them are more male-dominated. The top two parenting types are the natural and nurturing parents. And the top male parenting types are the dutiful and chief parents. But what they have in common is that they all have the sensing and judging preferences. This is a big discovery for me. This is considered the guardian temperament. They are the concrete and detail-oriented people. As parents, they tend to be more strict and driven to teach right from wrong. They tend to use more corporal punishment. They emphasize teaching their children to conform to the norms of society, and they're concerned about being great providers for their child. And they may be overprotective when it comes to teaching their children. So that's the parenting preference for half of this country. And you can hear their voices very loudly when it comes to the debates about what the proper way is to parent. As for my personality and parenting type, it's definitely true that I don't fit the standards I just described. I said I'm the innovative parent. So my type says that I'm enthusiastic and encouraging, which is true, that I want my kids' lives to be filled with adventures and experiences which they can learn from, and that's all true too, but they don't always appreciate that. And it says that my attention can be inconsistent with them because they are competing with other projects that are going on in my life, and that's also sadly true. So for me, parenting is a struggle between balancing my need to be independent and my wish to provide to be a good dad and have a good home for them. I know it's not always the most nurturing parent, but I am supportive. And having just learned that about myself has given me some things to ponder about how to become a better parent. So if you are a parent, it might be interesting for you to understand what your own type is. Consider how it compares with your parenting style, and if there are ways that you can also be a better parent. There's something really important to remember about the personality test, though, and I said it earlier. Even though those tests are good at telling you what comes naturally to you, it doesn't mean that you should or shouldn't become a parent. I remember being reassured at work that my results from taking that test weren't going to be used for job assignments. They weren't going to look for certain personality types for certain kinds of jobs. They understood that even though you may not have a natural gift at something, it didn't mean that you couldn't be good at it. Many skills in life are hard earned by practice and experience. Parenting is definitely one of those. I have friends who are solo parents. So what about them? They had to be both mom and dad all the time. So for them, it would be really good for them to understand what parenting type they are and for them to fully use all the female and male traits that they possess. If they naturally have more traits of one gender than the other, then it might be good for them to develop the skills associated with the other gender so they can also be a well-balanced parent. Now, when my first child, Matthew, was only two, people would compliment my wife and I on how great parents we were because he was such a jolly and easygoing kid. And I remember laughing at the idea of that and explaining to them that it wasn't us teaching him how to be a good kid, it was Matthew who taught us to be good parents. And when my daughter Lizzie was born a few years later, she was a completely different kid, but of course wonderful. And she taught us even more about parenting because she was taught us a different skill set because we had to adjust to her. So I think that there's a family contract that gets created when a family is formed, and it evolves as the family grows. And that contract is based on the gifts and skill sets and parenting types of the parents, and also the needs and personality types of the children. Babies, of course, are very vocal about what their needs are, and the parents have to figure out the best way to meet those needs. And the parents will learn and adapt and change to meet those needs. And as the child grows up, they will know which parent to go to get different needs met, or who in the community to get different needs met. They may know to go to dad to get permission to go out on a date, and go to mom for help with schoolwork. They will know who to go to when they scrape their knee, and who to go to when they want money for a candy bar. They know. Just ask them. And they may go to dad for some things considered motherly, and they may go to mom for some things considered fatherly. Each family is completely unique in that, and that's as it should be. So who did you go to for your nurturing? Who mothered you over your life? I look back over my own life, and I tried to see what kind of parenting types my folks were, and they were surprisingly easy to identify. My mom is the generous parent who really is generous and aims to please, and she loves to smother and is always concerned about my well-being. But she often uses guilt to try to get me to do what she wants me to do. She was a wonderful nurturer growing up, and she is still a very caring person. Now, my dad, he was the logical parent. He always did his own thing, but he did things with me too. He was never very expressive with his emotions, but he was always content with his kids leading their own lives, and he always respected my choices. So I always went to dad when I wanted something, because I knew he would listen to my rational arguments for what I wanted. So, but outside of my parents, my male and female teachers and coaches mothered me and gave me lots of tough love. And then my bosses, too. Much of my career growth has been closely related to my personal growth. And I have my male and female bosses to thank for nurturing me. My close friends nurture and support me as well. And of course, my wife, who knows me better than anyone and insists that she doesn't want to mother me, still supports me and keeps me grounded in reality. And I cannot forget my church community. I can't imagine a more nurturing group of people who have been so supportive and mothering to me and my family. And I can see that here as well, that this is a very nurturing community. Well, that's my list. What's yours? This, above any other day, is a perfect day to ponder and appreciate who mothered you growing up and who still mothers you. So one of the challenges in parenting is to recognize and appreciate that there are many ways to be a mother and a father and not force standards onto others. I see stories in the media every day about the different ways to parent. And every one of them seems to bring out passionate critics and supporters of whatever the parenting topic is. Again, one of the big takeaways from the Myers-Briggs class I took years ago was that even though it's really cool to have validation for how your wonderful own personality style is and what it is and how it works, the most important thing is to appreciate the styles of the other people and to learn how to communicate and work with them better. It was important to realize that not everyone is just like me, and I shouldn't expect them to act or think like me. Well, that's very true for parenting. We should appreciate all the ways that people can be mothers and fathers and support everyone's efforts. Now, one last thing before we wrap this up, and that's the understanding that even though men have the same potential as women to be motherly, it doesn't mean that we always participate in the fullest. Or maybe that's just me. One of my core beliefs is that life should be fair and relationships should be balanced. In my own family, my wife and I both have careers, and even though we are both good, we have a good parenting partnership, I acknowledge that I do let her take the lead in maintaining the home and family. So my Mother's Day gift to my wife and to my kids is to be more consistently engaged. And maybe that's something that the dads out there can think about as well. So, on this Mother's Day, let us appreciate the motherly and fatherly tendencies in each of us. understanding what they lend to our individual styles, and that there is more to discover and learn. Each one of us can use their natural parenting preferences and develop additional skills to create, nurture, and provide for our precious creations. On this day, let us also acknowledge everyone who has ever mothered us and thank them for their care. Love, care, and nurturing belong to everyone. May it be so. Now please rise as you are willing and able to sing verses 3 and 4 from hymn number 67. We sing now together in our gray hymnal. Please be seated for the extinguishing of the chalice. Please join me in the responsorial words on the wall. We extinguish this flame, but not our hope for our children's future, our courage in the face of crisis and oppression, or the love we share for each other and all the people of Mother Earth. Our benediction is taken from Norbert Chopek's Flower Communion Prayer. In the name of Providence, which implants in the seed the future of the tree, and in the hearts of men and women the longing for people living in human love. In the name of the highest, whom we move, and who makes the mother and father, brother and sister, what they are. The name of sages and great religious leaders who sacrificed their lives to hasten the coming of peace and justice. Let us renew our resolution, sincerely to be real brothers and sisters, regardless of any kind of bar which estranges one from another. In this holy resolution, may we be strengthened, knowing that we are one family, that one spirit, the spirit of love, unites us. May we endeavor more perfect and more joyful life. Amen. As Nicole plays our postlude, let us adjourn for coffee and community.